Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where currently we have overcast skies, 39 degrees. Out at the airport, they are reporting 89% humidity, southeast winds to 6 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak Crabbers voted last night whether to go crabbing. There hasn't really been a lot of cold weather so far this winter in the YK Delta, or at least what they consider cold. And a small vacant lot in downtown Juneau is the center of a dispute between Alaska and the U.S. Department of the Interior.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Authorities are confirming an 11th victim of the Monterey Park mass shooting has died. Los Angeles area officials are not yet releasing that person's identity, nor those of most of the other 20 victims who are among those killed or injured late Saturday when a gunman identified as an Asian man in his 70s attacked a dance hall where people were celebrating the Lunar New Year. NPR's Nathan Roth says authorities have released some information, though, about the victims.
The Los Angeles County Coroner's Office has released preliminary information on the victims. None was younger than 50 years of age, and three of the victims were in their 70s. Two of the women who were killed were identified, including 65-year-old Mi Nan. Her family released a statement on Twitter saying she spent years going to the dance studio where the shooting occurred and that it was what she loved to do. Information on the other victims is being withheld until their families have been notified. Nathan Rott, NPR News, Monterey Park.
Police say the gunman went to another dance hall in a neighboring city but fled after two attendees wrestled the gun from him. He was later found dead of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police are still investigating motive. Asian American and Pacific Islanders nationwide are shaken by the attack perpetrated by a member of the community. On top of the anti-Asian discrimination and violence, it's increased since the start of the pandemic. Fears were underscored by White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre's remarks today.
We do know how deeply it has impacted the AAPI community. Monterey Park is home to one of the largest AAPI communities in America.
In honor of the victims, President Biden ordered flags be lowered to half staff. The field for the Arizona 2024 Senate race is growing after Congressman Ruben Gallego announced he will seek the Democratic nomination. The seat is currently held by independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who recently left the party. Here's NPR's Susan Davis.
Sinema has not yet announced if she will seek re-election in 2024, but Arizona is likely to be a top priority for control of the Senate and White House. Gallego had been considering a possible run even before Sinema left the Democratic Party in December, though she still caucuses with Democrats for the purpose of organizing the Senate. No Republicans have yet entered the race. Gallego is Latino and a military veteran. He's likely to run to the left of Sinema, who's become a top target for the progressive movement after opposing key parts of President Biden's agenda, as well as her opposition to changing filibuster rules to make it easier to pass legislation in the Senate. Susan Davis, NPR News, Washington.
Four more members of the far-right Oath Keepers group have been convicted in Washington, D.C. of several charges, including seditious conspiracy in connection with the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol 2 years ago. They have been ordered to remain under house arrest until they are sentenced. This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak crabbers again voted on Sunday night to hold out for better prices from local seafood processors for this year's Tanner Crab harvest. Ahead of last night's vote, crabbers voted on Friday night to reject the latest price offered by Kodiak canneries of $3.25 per pound. About three-quarters of the members of the Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative voted to continue negotiating a price they say is fair for fishermen, according to the co-op's secretary and treasurer, Kevin Abina. Nearly 200 vessels up and down Alaska's Aleutian chain had been standing down since last weekend, when canneries and Kodiak offered them $2.50 per pound for Tanner crabs. That's nearly $6 per pound less than last year. Crabbers in the South Peninsula and Chignik agreed to higher prices being offered by canneries down the Aleutian chain over the weekend and will go fishing. Processors in King Cove and Chignik were also offering profit sharing as a part of their prices, which bump up the final amount that goes to skippers and crew. Kodiak's Tanner crab fishery, however, has the lion's share of this season's harvest at 5.8 million pounds. Combined with fisheries in Chignik and the South Peninsula, 7.3 million pounds total of Tanners are up for grabs in the westward region. Members of the Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative, which includes permit holders in Kodiak's fishery, have no plans to meet yet in the future. Kodiak's Tanner crab season runs through March. A small vacant lot in downtown Juneau is at the center of a dispute between the state of Alaska and the U.S. Department of the Interior. It's the latest development in a years-long effort by the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida, Indian tribes of Alaska, to protect traditional lands. KTOO's Katie Anastas reports.
Tlingit and Haida President Chelyaish Richard Peterson recently signed a deed to place a small parcel of land into federal trust. It essentially creates Indian country, a small spot where tribal law would apply. The lot is less than 800 square feet, but Peterson says the decision is about more than just the land. It's about tribal sovereignty and self-determination.
These lands were unlawfully and illegally taken. Through the years, we've legally and lawfully tried to get them back and trying to protect them into perpetuity.
The state of Alaska is challenging the decision, saying it undermines key terms of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act by creating a reservation. In a lawsuit filed Tuesday, the state says it, quote, jeopardizes the state's rights to tax and to enforce land use, natural resource management, environmental and public safety regulations on that trust land, unquote. Rules around whether Alaska Native tribes can put land into trust have changed with presidential administrations over the last several years. Under the Obama administration, Alaska Native tribes were allowed to submit applications for the first time since 1980. And in 2017, the Craig Tribal Association became the first Alaska Native tribe to have an application approved. But under the Trump administration, the Interior Department withdrew the revision. Then, under the Biden administration, the department issued a new solicitor's opinion, allowing land to be put into trust for Alaska Native tribes again. Peterson says this decision is in line with the latest opinion.
The Craig application, which I applaud, was the first. It should not be the last application to be approved. And now it's not. Ours is the second.
The Central Council has four other applications pending. If the Interior Department approves them, a total of 3.5 acres owned by the tribe would be put into trust. Peterson says having Indian country in Alaska opens up new federal funding opportunities. Tribal economic development bonds can only be spent on facilities within a reservation. That leaves Alaska Native tribes largely excluded from the program. He says the state has an opportunity to collaborate with tribes and move forward.
The state isn't hurt by our sovereignty, and there's countless states in the union that thrive and prosper right alongside their tribes.
Peterson says the state's lawsuit is setting the relationship between the state and tribes back.
This endangers all applications for future land of trust for all tribes, not just Juneau, not just an urban center, but all of the rural applications.
The Interior Department also has pending applications from the Ninilchik Traditional Council and the Native Village of Fort Yukon. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
There's been a real lack of sustained cold weather so far this winter in the YK Delta. The lowest temperature in Bethel through January 19th has only been 15 below zero. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports.
Temperatures next week in Bethel will stay below zero and colder upriver. It's already been down to 30 below in Aniak just last month, but that, of course, is a normal part of the lower YK climate. It's colder this time of year on the upper river and not as cold, but windier, of course, closer to the coast. That's according to climate specialist Rick Toman. He's with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy at the International Arctic Research Center at University of Alaska Fairbanks.
We've got a short hit of colder weather. Probably will be about as cold as it's been, might get to 15 below again at Bethel, might get a little colder, probably won't get as cold as it was last month upriver. But it looks like we're going to stay in the kind of the same weather pattern that we've been in once we get into the weekend with the east to northeast winds will pick up again and temperatures will go up. But that, of course, means wind chills will go down.
Rick Toman says dealing with the wind is the biggest challenge when preparing for a cold hit. It is important to keep the air where you don't want it, like around your water and sewage pipes.
That wind is really important, and that can really push that colder air into houses, into crawl spaces. So even though, oh, it's only zero out, that doesn't sound so cold. But with that wind, it can really move that cold air around. So as always, want to be as insulated as you can be. Most areas in the YK Delta don't have a deep snowpack this year. And so some years that will offer some protection. Most places don't have that this season.
The K300 is coming up next weekend. So what can spectators, mushers, and their dogs expect?
I would say it certainly does not look like that we have any deep cold would be expected for that point. It may well remain fairly windy. And so as teams head upriver, potentially going to be running into that wind, that, of course, are the kind of conditions that folks would typically expect for the race. That's not unusual. And so at this point, I would say we are 8 days away, so lots of time for it to change. But at this point, doesn't look like anything out of the ordinary for the race.
Low snowpack is a cause for concern for Toman. Low snowpack means early snowmelt. That, combined with very warm, dry weather, can lead to a big wildfire season.
Just because you have low snowpack, that's only one piece of the puzzle, but it is something that we're going to have to watch as we go through the rest of the winter and into the spring if we don't get significant snowfall. And we could make that up, but if we don't, that concern about early snowmelt and starting to dry out the tundra early, that ups the chances for another wildfire season. Still have other pieces of the puzzle have to go together. Needs to be warm and dry, and you need to get those sparks from thunderstorms come May and June.
Toman says it used to be that the YK Delta really didn't have to think too much about wildfires. Sometimes smoke from interior fires would drift into the region, but you didn't have to really worry too much about flames encroaching on communities. And clearly, that's not the case anymore. It is something that we have to think about.
A natural gas producer with roots in Homer is going on year three of fighting the state and Kenai Peninsula Borough on the property taxes he's paying for his platform in Cook Inlet. KDLL Sabine Pooks has more.
John Hendricks is president of HEX, which acquired a gas-producing unit and platform in the middle of Cook Inlet in a bankruptcy proceeding in 2020. He says the high property taxes are making it hard for him to invest in additional natural gas production there.
This is taking money out of our coffers and into our workforce, where it makes us cut back.
Meanwhile, the Kenai Peninsula Borough is racking up hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees to fight the case. It all hinges on a disagreement over how much the property is worth. At the beginning of every year, the state of Alaska assesses oil and gas exploration, production, and transportation properties. And for the last 2 years, it's valued Hex's property, known as the Kitchen Lights Unit, at around $81 million. Hendricks says the property is worth a quarter of that. Both times his companies appealed those assessments to the state's review board, where both times they've been upheld. And now the appeals are in court, set to go to trial this summer. The fight's coming at a big cost to the Kenai Peninsula Borough, which is defending the state's assessment as an intervener. The Kitchen Lights property falls within the boundaries of the borough, and the borough gets about half of the $1.6 million in annual taxes that HEX pays. The state gets the other half. And revenue from the borough share is divided between its general fund and services in Nikiski. For example, over $200,000 went toward the Nikiski Fire Service area in 2022. Jessica Dillon is an Anchorage attorney representing the borough in the case. She says HEX, which bought out Fury, shouldn't be getting special treatment from the state.
Both the state and borough are required by law to treat all property taxpayers equally, and that law sets out how oil and gas property must be valued. But Fury rejects that method and asks for special treatment from the state and the borough by having its property assessed differently from all other oil and gas taxpayers.
Legal counsel for the state declined to comment on the case. Roger Marks, a petroleum economist in Anchorage, says it's not hard to see how these sorts of disputes happen when it comes to assessments. Tax assessment battles between the owners of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and Marine Terminal in Valdez and the state lasted years and cost multiple millions in legal fees for all parties. Marks says assessing a property isn't like assessing a car, where you can go to the Blue Book to see what other people have paid for the same model.
With a platform sitting in the Cook Inlet, there's not a lot of comparable sales.
He says the method of assessing is laid out in state statute, but the different steps to get there require judgment calls. In Hex's case, state assessors have estimated how much they think the property's worth based on how much it would cost to build the platform today. That's a very different number from what Hex actually paid for the property in 2020.
The combination of buying it under a distress sale back then, coupled with all the inflation we've had, would yield quite a bit of difference between the assessed value and what they paid for it.
Hendricks, the company president, says he knew about the state's assessment when he bought the property 3 years ago, but he thought the state would budge.
To me, naively, I thought it was a no-brainer.
Disputes like these, when they do arise, are often decided in settlements out of court. He says the state's not accounting for how hard it is to produce in Cook Inlet today, an oil and gas basin that many producers have long abandoned. And he says the taxes he's paying every year could be going to production and paying a Kenai Peninsula workforce. Hex sells its gas to buyers within South Central Alaska.
Inlet's got a lot of challenges, but if they have a lot of challenges, then the valuation needs to go down, right?
The legal fight isn't stopping anytime soon. The Kenai Peninsula Borough estimates spending approximately $400,000 to cover legal fees on the case through trial. Hendricks says his company has spent $500,000 on litigation. And the assessment for the upcoming tax year hasn't come out yet. But Hendricks says Hex will be appealing when it does.
In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A North Pole man is being held at Fairbanks Correctional Center in connection with a double homicide last Friday near Delta Junction. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
33-year-old Daniel Surkov of North Pole was arraigned Saturday on charges that he shot two men to death the day before at a facility just north of Delta. Fairbanks Correctional Center booking office staff say the presiding magistrate ordered Surkov held on two counts of first-degree murder and set bail at $2 million. Troopers identified the two victims as 44-year-old Andre Derosian and 35-year-old Dmitry Sergienko, both of Delta Junction. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation says troopers got a report about a double homicide at around 1 Friday afternoon, and when they arrived, they found the bullet-riddled bodies of two men and a dog at what authorities say is a drug rehab facility on the Tanana Loop extension. By then, rumors were flying on social media as area residents tried to find out what was going on. One woman who lives a few miles away from the murder scene and asked not to be identified says the uncertainty made her worry even more.
I'm a widow. That's just me. And I'm armed, but I'd feel safer if I had more information that I could have got for the troopers had they put it out.
Soon after troopers discovered the bodies, they were contacted by Fairbanks police, who advised them that Surkov had just informed them that he'd violated the terms of his release for an earlier unrelated case by possessing a gun that he used to shoot an aggressive dog in Delta. According to the Alaska Bureau of Investigation report, troopers then talked with Surkov and determined he was involved in the homicides. They confiscated his 9mm handgun they suspect was used in the shootings and remanded him to Fairbanks Correctional Center on 2 counts of murder and evidence tampering. He was later also charged with criminal mischief. The woman in Delta concerned about the lack of information from troopers says they should have contacted area residents after they arrested Surkov to let him know a suspect was in custody.
If they already had the guy, they didn't let us know. So a lot of people are sitting at home that are worried about their own safety.
State Department of Public Safety spokesperson John Doherty says troopers do have a system that Alaskans can sign up for to get texts or email alerts by going to the DPS website. And he says troopers didn't issue an alert in this case because they found the victim's bodies only a few minutes before Fairbanks PD called and said Surkov was at the police station.
That alert system was not activated as there was no action that the troopers needed the Delta Junction community to take.
This is believed to be the Delta area's first double homicide. An investigation into the murders continues. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
More signs of economic weakness. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. A measure of the economy's direction over the months ahead is showing signs of contraction. The Conference Board's latest measure of its leading economic index for the U.S. fell 1%. There was a similar decline a month earlier, signaling a potential recession. Economists have been conflicted, though, over whether a recession is imminent. Spotify is laying off 6% of its global workforce, which likely amounts to about 400 jobs. Major tech companies have laid off tens of thousands of people this month. The IRS begins accepting tax returns today. The deadline to file is April 18. The agency says it's hired thousands of workers to improve telephone customer service. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
The Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/sustainability.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 23rd day of January, the year 2023. Sun rose today at 9:29. It will set again at 5:14. That will give us 7 hours and 45 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 46 degrees set in 1937, and our record low was minus 4 set in 1947. Currently 39 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 10 miles of visibility, southeast winds to 3 miles per hour, 89% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for a 50% chance of rain this afternoon and a 30% chance of rain tonight. Mostly cloudy skies today and tonight. High near 39 today, low overnight about 35. Southwest winds to 10 today are expected to turn to the south to 15 tonight. For tomorrow, rain is likely after 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 40 and southeast winds to 10. And for Wednesday, a 40% chance of rain. Mostly cloudy skies on Wednesday with a high near 40, southwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. They are calling for partly sunny skies on Thursday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:43 this afternoon. That will be a 10.8-foot tide, followed by a low, low tide at 9:25 p.m., minus 2.2 feet. Our high tide for the middle of the night will be at 3:55 a.m. at 8.6 feet, and our morning low tide here on the east side will happen at 9:26 a.m. and be 1 1/3 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 3:16 this afternoon and be 16.6 feet. Your low tide will happen at 9:58, just about 10 p.m., and be minus 3.4 feet in Larsen Bay. Your high tide for the middle of the night will be at 4:18 a.m. at 14.8 feet, and your morning low tide on the west side will happen at 10:13 a.m. and be 1.8 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Thursday, January 26th, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having a board work session at the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening at 6 p.m. Also on January 26th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Tuesday, January 31st, the Assembly will be having a special meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 11:30 a.m. And on Wednesday, February 1st, the Assembly will be having a special meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 12:15 p.m. And the Assembly will be having a regular meeting on February 2nd at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. These meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live-stream notifications. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. South winds to 30 knots today, seas to 24 feet. For tonight, south 25, becoming southeast 15, seas staying up there at 19 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 20, seas 14 feet. For Tuesday night, they are calling for south winds to 30 knots, seas coming back up to 18 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. East winds to 15 knots, becoming south 25 this afternoon, seas building to 7 feet this afternoon. For tonight, south 25, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, southeast 15, seas to 3 feet. For Tuesday night in the Shelikof, look for northeast winds to 25, seas coming back up to 7 feet. Notice is hereby given. The Board of Education will be having a regular meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's number F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tomorrow. That meeting begins at 7:30 p.m. They will also be having a regular council meeting on Thursday. That meeting also begins at 7:30 p.m. Both meetings will be held in the Kodiak Public Library, and both are open to the public. Public members are also encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM, and the meetings will be web-streamed. The web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge is hosting the Families Understanding Nature program on Wednesday. That's happening at 12 p.m. It's a free program designed for kids 2 to 5 years of age and their families. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge will provide a story, snacks, and activities on the topic of animal tracks. So that sounds really interesting. If you have kids and have something that you need for them to do on Wednesday, that happens at 12 p.m., will be held at the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge headquarters downtown. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open. The Kodiak Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through 8th grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website or stop by the Refuge Visitor Center. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours. That's Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. The deadline to enter the lottery is March 31st. The Kodiak Senior Center is again in need of paper bags. Please bring your clean, untorn paper bags to the Senior Center for their home-delivered lunch and pickup meal services. And again, please just bring by clean, untorn bags. And the Kodiak Refuge is hosting a nature journaling night free for adults, teens, and youth. Stop by any time between 4 and 6 p.m. on Thursday, January 6th. That's at the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Thursday, January 6th between 4 and 6 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.